Thank you again for joining me. Now, this summer, I just have this sense. It's a unique summer, isn't it? It's a unique summer. I mean, we passed through such an unusual spring that has certainly led us right into these days of summer. And while things have started to open up and we have more freedom to move about, which is encouraging, we continue to experience so significant of changes and even some upheaval, perhaps, in our own routines and schedules or things that aren't happening that were used to happening and we wished happened and that's not happening. And all of that, all of the unexpected things and all of the changes, all of the requirements that perhaps we're falling under now or feel we have to fall under, each change and variation, I just want to remind you that each one of these things is a cause of stress to be elevated within ourselves. I mean, things like remembering to take my mask everywhere I go. Did you ever think in your wildest dreams that there would be a day when you would be saying, I've got to take my mask and wear it in public? I mean, that's just something I never imagined saying or experiencing. The anticipation of the unpredictability contributes to the increased uncertainty, and all of that elevates stress in each and every one of us. And heightened stress, I say this just to remind each one of us, because heightened stress means that we have to be doubly aware and doubly intentional to make great decisions, because we'll be tempted to just make a reaction rather than make a good decision. So while every year, every season that we walk through in life is different, these days are certainly, to use a common word now, unprecedented, without a doubt. And as we move through this season, we are moving through the season, which I'm happy about, we are moving forward, rather than just jump back into a routine and say, oh, let's go back to normal, you and I have an extraordinary opportunity to use this experience, an opportunity to actually seize what you have learned, or to look back and reflect on and think about, what have I just learned by going through what we have gone through the last several months? What is it that we can implement into our lives so that we can be better for it? Let's not just jump ahead and miss this opportunity to be better for what we have experienced. It would really be a shame to go through all of what we have gone through, what you have gone through in the last 4 months, and neglect to use that for improvement. You know, last week we had celebrated the 4th of July, and that really prompted me to think a little bit about history. And throughout history, there have always been seasons of difficult times. And what I am intrigued about, when I look back on seasons of difficult times, what I'm intrigued by is the people who experience extraordinarily unprecedented circumstances that I would never even imagine that they would survive, and yet I think we all admire. Those are the people that are inspirational. These are the people we respect. Those who have walked through great adversity, walked through the very flames, as we call it, walked through the valley of the shadow of death and emerged enriched. We respect people who have been hurt, and yet they respond justly without losing their passion for life. People that go through life and experience extraordinary challenges, and yet they don't lose their passion for life. We admire people who walk through great adversity, exercising their ability to choose to respond rather than react. We admire people that, instead of having a knee-jerk reaction, consider carefully how to respond. The power of choosing to respond is the opportunity to turn bad things into good things. It's the opportunity to give light where there is darkness. It is the opportunity to give hope where there is despair. You and I have very little control over how quickly things will open up. And there will be all sorts of speculation that we're going to hear and read, and it's going to be given to us. But here's the one variable that you and I have the opportunity to make a difference, and that is how you will respond. how will you respond? Will you just move forward like nothing ever happened and just keep going and just go back to a normal that maybe was, or just go ahead like nothing ever happened? Or will you and I seize the opportunity to evaluate what you have learned and take steps to benefit from it? Because your family, your community, you can all benefit from this. Imagine what that might look like. Because it really would be tragic to waste the perspective that you have gained in these last few months. One of the most influential decisions that you can make, as life throws all sorts of storms and struggles your way, which life is full of bumps and storms, one of the most liberating and influential decisions you can make is choosing how you respond. Choosing how you respond. That's an opportunity that you and I have, and that will make us and make you stronger. It will make you better. It will empower you to handle life better. So you have the power to choose to respond rather than react. And the power that you have to choose to respond rather than react, even when perhaps the reaction is the popular way, you can choose to respond. And when you choose to respond, that empowers you to make a difference for yourself, for your family, for your community. Your ability to respond rather than react, it gives you the freedom to dictate and influence your future and the future of those people around you. If we simply react to circumstances, it sets up us to reflect the circumstances itself. If we choose to react, we relinquish our own personal control of our lives. You've seen people go through difficult circumstances who react and they just spiral into consequences, often repeating struggles over and over and over and over. But a thoughtful, measured response creates an opportunity for present and future positive outcomes. The difficulty is reaction is natural. Response is not natural. It has to be a developed, conscious behavior that we take on. So the history of our faith, of the Christian faith, is filled with men and women who responded to hardships with measured responses that made absolutely catalytic decisions that influenced individuals, communities, nations, and changed the world. You know, the man at the very center of our faith chose to surrender his life and surrender himself to his enemies. He chose not to defend himself. He chose to endure the most difficult experience, and he did that, making that choice for me and for you. He did it for our freedom and for our salvation, for your freedom and your salvation. This is what the Lord's Supper, communion, demonstrates to us, to each one of us, that Jesus chose to give up his life so that we may have life without guilt, so that we may live life without feeling under the pressure, but rather be set free from sin and to live life abundantly. As Christians, we have an incredible opportunity because a faith-filled response has the power to redeem pain. A faith-filled response has the power to encourage. It has the power to give strength while influencing those around you. To encourage you to lean into this concept of responding through faith instead of reacting through fear, I want to look at a historical figure, a familiar figure from the Old Testament. And I want to look at Joseph today. I want to talk about Joseph and share with you a little bit about Joseph. Now, many of you are familiar with the story, so don't jump ahead and leave me behind. Kind of walk with me through this story, if you would, and try to pick up on the points that I think are so important that Joseph teaches us and makes available to us. Because Joseph's story, I'm obviously going to skim over it because it covers a number of chapters in Genesis, and I encourage you to go home and read it. Maybe if you've read it even last week, read it again. But read Genesis and read through Genesis 38, 39 through chapter 50 and hear about, experience, see what Joseph can teach each of us. See what he can teach you. So I'm just going to cover a little bit of Joseph's story because he has an incredible story for us to learn from. Joseph, think about this. Joseph, for 25 years, exercised faith-filled responses. Actually, he did for all his life, but for the 25 years we're focusing on, about that time, he focused on and he made these decisions that were faith-filled responses. And long before he saw the benefit of any of those things, for 25 years, he just kept at it and faithfully responded. Faithfully responded. And the outcome, which we get to see, was beyond his imagination. But he didn't see that as he was in the middle of the storm. He didn't see that as he was in the middle or even in any part of that, the circumstances that he was in. And I think his story so powerfully illustrates the sustaining, sanity-preserving and course-reversing power of a measured, faith-filled response. Like me, like you, Joseph did not know the end of his story. I mean, really, Joseph didn't even know there was a story worth telling in what he was going through. In the middle of his trials, he could not have imagined the transformation, the redemption that was going to happen, the cumulative benefit of each of his responses. He did not even have it in mind. A quick summary. Let's just do a quick summary of Joseph. He was betrayed by his brothers. He was kidnapped. He entered into slavery. He became a slave. He was sold twice. He was framed for a crime that he didn't commit. In fact, he did the right thing and ended up being thrown in prison. And we pick up the story right about there where nobody is looking for Joseph. Joseph has been betrayed over and over. It doesn't look like anybody is looking out for Joseph. Joseph is all alone at the point we're picking up this story. Now, perhaps one of these places is where your story intersects Joseph's story. If you feel alone, or if you feel betrayed, or if you feel uncertain about the future, or unsure of what this will look like, or what tomorrow will bring. And yet, in spite of each of Joseph's debilitating circumstances, he continued to respond in a faith-filled way. Even in uncertain and fearful times, Joseph responded as if God was with him, as if God was in control, as if God loved him. He responded that way every single time, which perhaps this is a place where we intersect with Joseph. If we ask ourselves the question, how would Joseph respond if he was in the circumstances, the position that you're in? How would Joseph respond? You know people in your circumstance or similar that have a reaction, that react. You may know what the politically correct reaction is, but if Joseph had the experience that you have had, if Joseph was facing the decisions that you are facing, if Joseph, who for more than 25 years responded with absolute confidence that God was still in control, God was with him, Joseph understood that there was more to his story. He understood his current circumstances are a chapter, not the entire story. How would Joseph respond to your circumstances? So let's pick up the story. Let's pick up Joseph's story as it's recorded for us in Genesis. Joseph had just done what was right, and yet he was accused falsely of doing what was wrong, convicted and thrown in jail. So Genesis 39:20, we pick up here. Joseph's master put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was in prison, the Lord was with him. Does anybody find that a little ironic, a little bit like, wait a minute, can you wrap your mind around that a little bit? Joseph is being punished for doing something, well, for not doing something that was wrong, and he gets thrown in jail. Joseph is being treated unjustly, and it says God was with Joseph. This is an example of one of those circumstances where our reaction is usually crying out to God, God, where are you? Where are you? And we learn that Joseph is saying, God is with me. God is with me, even in these circumstances. Even in the circumstances that we don't plan the way they've gone, God is with me. Even when it doesn't feel like God is with Joseph, He's saying, I know God is with me. Even when the circumstances appear that God has abandoned you, we're learning that Joseph says, do not fear. God is with you. Joseph's master put him in prison, the place where the prisoners, the king's prisoners, were confined. But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him, and he showed him kindness. Now, this word kindness in the original Hebrew language, it meant more like loving kindness, simply meaning a little bit more, implying that even though God appeared to haven't done anything for him lately, that Joseph considered himself in a good relationship with God and in a relationship with God who really cared for him. And then this next part really almost becomes confusing around loving kindness. Really? Is this what it looks like? So let me pick it up. The Lord was with him, and he showed him kindness, granted him favor in the eyes of a prison warden. Now let me just stop there, because this is problematic for me. If God is for you, would you really have a relationship with a prison guard? I mean, if God was really for you, if God is for you, you would not experience punishment, would you? For something you didn't even do? If God is for you, wouldn't he protect you from false accusations? If God is for you, see, doesn't that kind of mess sometimes with our understanding of theology, of Christianity? But Joseph unlocks this for us, because months and years go by. I imagine Joseph did not feel like he was going anywhere, like he was making any progress. He didn't feel like he was making a difference, or I don't even think he felt like his life mattered. But the story continues, and what appears to be unrelated is then we hear that Pharaoh's baker, and again, if you read through the whole text, it has a little bit more of it, but we just don't have the time to do that right now. But what's seems very unrelated, and perhaps that's where unrelated things or what seem like unrelated things happen to us, and suddenly we see God showing up there and guiding us there. Unrelated, Pharaoh's cupbearer and baker, these two gentlemen get thrown in prison with Joseph. So we pick it up in Genesis 40, and it says this: the captain of the guard assigned them to Joseph, and he attended to them. After they had been in custody for some time, and again, I'm kind of jumping through to get to the points here, the baker and the cupbearer each had a dream that they couldn't understand, but they felt that there was real meaning in this, and something was serious that they needed to grasp a hold of. And Joseph says to them, they're all in prison together, think about this, they're all in prison together, and Joseph says, why do you look so sad? I'm thinking it's pretty obvious, but anyways, they could have said, because we're sitting in prison, it's cold, this is not what I'm used to. I was used to being with Pharaoh, next to having him and having the greatest things and testing all his foods, and I'm in prison now. Joseph, don't you get it? But they've had these dreams that have disturbed them to the point of disturbing. These vivid dreams, and they are convinced that means something more, but they don't know how to interpret them. So Joseph says to them, in verse 8, it says, Joseph said to them, they ask him to interpret the dreams, and he says, don't interpretations belong to God? And then he says, tell me your dreams. Even in the midst of the crazy situation that Joseph is in, he's still believing in God. I mean, think about that. He is still relying on God. He's been in prison for years. He's been in prison with the cupbearer, with the other people that have come and gone. And he still is believing in God. Joseph continues to respond faithfully rather than just react. Now, after the cupbearer, this gets more than PG rated. I'm going to edit some of this for you, but if you want to read the text, oh, it gets juicy. After the cupbearer tells Joseph his dream, Joseph responds in verse 13, and he's telling the cupbearer what the dream means. He says, within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your position, and you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand again, just as you used to when you were the cupbearer. Here's where we learn something about Joseph that really is true for all of us. That Joseph, as you see in the next couple of verses, he had a sense that God was with him, but he also had a sense that we get a sense when you read the text that he was not enjoying his circumstances. He wasn't pleased with being where he was or in the circumstances he was in. And he was not immune to pain. He was not enjoying where he was. He was looking to improve his circumstances. And he told the cupbearer, these are the words that tell me all of that. They told the cupbearer, "Remember me to Pharaoh when you get out of prison. Remember me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison." He didn't want to stay there. Now the baker, so the cupbearer has told him his dream. The Joseph has interpreted for him what he says God tells him it is. The cupbearer tells him his dream. If you know the story, it's anyways, I'll give you just again the overview of this. I wonder, because this is not good news for the baker, I wonder if Joseph, knowing the truth, had thought about saying, "Sorry, I don't know. You'll have to find out." But yet Joseph honestly shares the truth of what he sees. He says, "Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head and impale your body on a pole," and you need to read the rest. It gets pretty gory. But you get the point. 3 days later, just as Joseph had interpreted, the cupbearer is restored and the baker is executed. Now, certainly, since Joseph had helped the cupbearer, right, and he had said, "Remember me to Pharaoh," he was expecting release at any point. But verse 23 tells us the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. Don't you want to just ask Joseph at this point? Don't you want to say to Joseph, "Joseph, do you still have confidence that God is with you? I mean, he's forgotten you. You're sitting and nothing has changed. Do you still have confidence, Joseph, that God has a plan? I mean, look, you're still in these tough circumstances. You're still in a place where, frankly, it's terrible to be." How much time has to pass before you begin to wonder if God is with me? If God is with you. What is it, and maybe the last few months has demonstrated to us individually, very personally, what is it that shakes your confidence that God has a plan? Is it sickness? Is it lockdown? Is it uncertainty? Because here's Joseph is in he doesn't have sickness, but he's in lockdown. He's in uncertainty. He's even asked to be released, say, "Remember me to Pharaoh and get me out of here," and it doesn't happen. So we can learn a lot from Joseph, because there's 768 or over 2 years that go by. And then Pharaoh has a series of dreams that no one can interpret. And the cupbearer says, "Oh, I remember. I remember there was a guy in prison with me, and he could interpret dreams. In fact, he interpreted my dream spot on." So he tells Pharaoh. So we pick up on chapter 41, verse 14. "So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh." Now, you don't show up before the king. Joseph has been in prison for a long period of time, and you don't show up before the king smelly and unshaven and in ragged clothes. So very detailed. Isn't it interesting how we get this kind of detail in the text? "Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'I had a dream and no one can interpret it. But I've heard that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it.'" Now Joseph's next words to me are so courageous. He's a foreigner. He's been locked up in this prison. He hasn't shaved or showered or smelled this good in years. And here he is. Had God done anything for him lately? And Joseph looks at Pharaoh, looks at the very king, the most powerful person in the world, and he says, I cannot do it. I cannot do it, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. Now, for you and I, we may say, that's not really problematic. That I don't see any problem with that. However, let's go to the context that they were in, because the problem with this answer, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. The problem is Pharaoh thought he was God, or at least one of the gods. Joseph is telling Pharaoh, it's kind of like, my God is going to beat up your God. My God is better than your God. That's kind of what he's saying here. My God is better than your God. So I think this is a courageous statement. And I'm guessing the guards were standing by and they were ready to come in and just haul Joseph off. They were going to take him away, and we know what would be next, right? But Pharaoh, for whatever reason, perhaps God's plan, Pharaoh was more curious than he was insulted. So as he explains, he listens as Joseph explains the dream. He speaks his dream. He tells Joseph what he had heard, what he saw, what he experienced in his dreams. And then Joseph explained, and I'm going to give you a summary. Again, I encourage you to dig out the text and read through the section of Genesis. But the dream was this. Joseph explained that for the next 7 years, there was going to be bumper crops. It was going to be amazing. There would be more grain produced than they could ever use. It would be so abundant all throughout Egypt. This would be so great. But the next 7 years after that would be a famine that would be so great that no one would ever even remember those years of plenty because the famine was so severe. And then Joseph did, he took another step that was so courageous. No commoner would ever do this. Joseph advises Pharaoh. Joseph was just in the prison, and now he's giving Pharaoh advice. And he tells him what to do. I mean, when was the last time that you explicitly told your boss what to do? Hey, do this. This is what you need to do, right? Usually it doesn't go too well. Joseph tells Pharaoh to appoint someone to be in charge and prepare Egypt for the coming famine. And that's what comes through here. Genesis 43, if you look at this up on the screen or on your screen and if you're live streaming, the plan seemed good to Pharaoh and all of his officials. So Pharaoh asked his officials, he said to them, can we find any man like this one in whom the Spirit of God has the Spirit of God? Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God... He's talking about Joseph's God now. Since God has made all of this known to you, there is no one so discerning and so wise as you. You shall be in charge. You shall be in charge of all of my palace. All of my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you. Joseph has just gone from prisoner to prime minister in like a day. I mean, it's just like wham, right? So then what happens is Joseph, again, reading through Genesis, Joseph, we hear the history and we know the story, Joseph builds warehouses in each of the local communities to store all of the grain that's being produced because there is such abundance. For 7 years, they build these warehouses all around Egypt to feed the people when the time comes, when the famine comes, and it does come. And it does come. And Joseph opens up Pharaoh's storehouses, saving the people. Because that famine spread, and it spread throughout the surrounding regions as well. It spread north to where Joseph's family, Jacob and Joseph's brothers, lived. And here's where the story takes another really interesting and divine twist. In Genesis 42, it says this, when Jacob learned that there was grain, Jacob, Joseph's father, learned that there was grain in Egypt, he said to his sons, why do you keep looking at each other? In other words, somebody take action. Come on, somebody do something here, right? He continued, I've heard that there's grain in Egypt. Go down and buy some so that we may live and not die. Now, can you imagine, are you getting a sense of the drama that is being set up here? After 30 years after the brothers had sold Joseph into slavery. They had no idea where Joseph ended up. They didn't know what they're about to walk into. The brothers were about to face the consequences of their decision from 30 years ago. If you were in Joseph's position, enslaved, years in prison, what would you do when those that were responsible stood before you? Genesis 42, verse 6 says, "Now Joseph was the governor of the land and the person who sold grain to all of its people. So when Joseph's brothers arrived, they bowed down before him, their faces to the ground," because that's kind of a normal thing that you would do in those times, in that context, before someone who you're going to both ask a favor and also someone who was a high official. As soon as Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but pretended to be a stranger. Joseph recognized them, and can you imagine what was flashing through his head? He remembered being abandoned. He remembered being a slave. He remembered being betrayed. He remembered the unjust treatment that he had received, the hopelessness of being in prison. He remembered the despair of being forgotten. And read the text, because Joseph initially, he kind of toys with his brothers. And he finally finds out his father is still alive and that he has a younger brother. Several chapters we walked through, Joseph is processing and deciding how to respond. And then Joseph defies expectations. What would you do if you were in his shoes? He denies his instinct. He denies a reaction of retaliation. Joseph chooses to seize the opportunity to make a powerful choice that has implications beyond, far, far, far beyond what he can imagine or what he was thinking about at that moment. He clears the room, has everybody else leave except his brothers, and they're standing before him. Now, I imagine, what could his brothers be thinking? They still don't recognize who he is. But he has everybody else leaves the room, and then this is what Joseph says. Joseph says to them, "I am Joseph. Is my father still living?" His brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. Wouldn't you be terrified? After knowing what you had put him through, at least your part of it? I mean, I think it's putting it mildly to say they were terrified. The second most powerful man was holding their lives. They had treated him absolutely terrible. They had betrayed him. They had left him for dead. They had denied him. They were terrified. But what they were not aware of is that Joseph had lived as if God was with him. Joseph had lived his life as part of God's plan. And he had done so for 30 years. And he chose not to react emotionally, but to respond faithfully. Joseph forgave his brothers. In chapter 45, it says this, "Then Joseph said to his brothers, 'Come close to me.' And when they had done so, he said, 'I am your brother Joseph, the one that you sold into slavery.'" Can you imagine them thinking, what's coming next? "And now do not be distressed. Do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save the lives that God sent me ahead to do." Joseph concludes, he now sees God's hand in it. The reason he is here, he gets a glimpse into God's plan. The reason he went through everything he went through was because God had a plan. God had a plan that Joseph would not have chosen. God had a plan for him being abandoned. God had a plan for him being forgotten. God had a plan. Joseph teaches each of us that when we faithfully respond, we will gain a perspective that we cannot gain any other way. Whenever we react, we will not be better for it, but we will also never gain the perspective to successfully move into our future. And then the story all wraps up here in chapter 50 of Genesis, when Joseph tells his brothers, "Do not be afraid." Those are words for us today. Do not be afraid. And he says, "Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, But God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, to save many lives. Joseph's brother, they had every intention to harm him. Every intention. But Joseph faithfully responded as if God was with him in every circumstance. In every situation, Joseph believed that God had a plan and God was with him. In every circumstance, Joseph resisted reacting and instead responded in a way that honored God. And because of those choices, God was using that to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. God's intention became a reality through one man's unprecedented circumstance, defying responses. He went in ways that no one would have done without trusting God. And individually, each one of Joseph's responses, individually, they all would have seemed very insignificant, just one at a time. But all together, they were part of the grace-filled story of the redemption that's available to each and every one of us, for me and for you. Joseph had no idea the nation of Israel, the future of the nation of Israel was held in the balance of his response. He had no idea when he was making each one of those choices. He had no idea that he and his 12 brothers would become the head of the tribes of the nation of Israel from whom the Messiah would be born. And through Jesus who came to the world to do what, in a way, Joseph had done on that day, to set people free and to give you and I abundant life. Joseph teaches us responding opens up a way to better outcomes, faithfully responding. So what circumstance solicits reaction from you? What causes you to just react? Think about that and maybe even write that down. When this happens, I know when someone attacks me, when someone insults me, I tend to react instead of responding, because that's something we can learn from. During this last few months, what was it that you found yourself reacting to that if you paused and responded could have made all the difference in the world? What step can you make to respond instead of reacting? How would someone in your circumstance, in your situation, how would they respond? How would you respond if you are confident that God is with you? If you are confident that God has a plan and you are part of it, how would you respond to each circumstance, each situation? Because your response and my response have the potential to make me, to make my family, to make your family, to make this community much better. The great thing is we all get to choose. You get to choose. We can seize this opportunity that God has put before us. Let's pray together. Lord God, Joseph's story is such a powerful story. It is such an incredible piece of history that gives us the vision that you are always with us. That if we will open our eyes and turn our lives to you, that you are always with us. And that you have a plan. Because in Joseph's life, we see that you had a plan all the way along. And yet, in the beginning, and in the places where Joseph was, there were so many times that it was uncertain what would happen. It was uncertain that there was a plan. But yet, God, you were in all of it. And you work in and through the people who love you to do amazing and incredible things. So I pray, Lord, you would help each of us to seize the opportunity before us, to learn how to respond faithfully, to learn from our experiences, to have our faith go deep in our hearts and minds and in our life, and that we would respond in the way that Joseph responded. So, Lord, I pray that you would guide us and you would give us the courage to be bold with our faith for you, Jesus. And I pray this through his name, Jesus, my Lord and Savior. Amen.